This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. If the Cleveland Browns are going to get back in the playoff race, tonight's the night it's got to start. Tonight's the night that could end any sort of hopes of a comeback, even at 3-6. We've been bringing up the Browns because of the attention that they all got during the offseason, but also because there is potential for the Browns to be back in the playoff race because their schedule is relatively easy. But they've got to beat Pittsburgh, and they've got to beat Pittsburgh twice in the span of 3 weeks. But if the Steelers bury them tonight and eliminate them from any real talk, I mean, they got to go run the table at 9-7 and hope for the best. Tonight could be the death knell of any playoff hope for the Cleveland Browns. For the Steelers, it all of a sudden puts them in an interesting position, right? Just a position where they have got a really good defense, one of the top of the line defenses that's playing in a top level. Offense has a lot to be desired, but for a team that started 0-3, for them to come back like this, to win four straight, to be 5-4, to be on the cusp of making a wild card run, I think it's a little too much to catch the Ravens because 7-2 and rolling along pretty well. But to make a wild card push, I've always said if you have a chance to make the playoffs, if your team has a chance to make the playoffs, root for that. Even if you know your team is flawed, and even if you know it means an early exit, root for that. Because, again, if you're in December and you're talking about playoffs and making it, need a win here and a loss there, you're not talking about a team that's picking in the top five anyway. You're talking about a team that's going to be middle of the road, picking, you know, around 18th, 19th, whatever it is. Always root for the playoffs because, one, it also gives your team a sense of confidence. And that's what I'm feeling from this Steelers team outside of their defense. This team could have, you know, without Ben Roethlisberger and the early struggles of a Mason Rudolph losing him, Delvin Hodges has to come in against the Chargers. Oh, my God, are they going to lose on the road? Well, they didn't. And now they've won a number of games on the road to put themselves back. It shows the organization, look, we can figure out ways, we can make moves, moves that'll work. And that's the Steelers' angle to tonight. But I think a lot of people should be focusing on the Browns, a talented team on paper, just not having, it has not translated well to the season. But the schedule is open for them to make a push to getting back in this race. But it has to start tonight. A little too early for must win, I get it, but this is as close as you can get to must win for a team that's hanging on to a playoff dream.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation AM. It is 1970 on Throwback Thursday on this date. In 1970, the Marshall Thundering Herd plane crash right after they played East Carolina. So this is Eric Clapton bringing us back. 1970s music. It got more upbeat as the show's gone along this morning. Before, it was really slow and kind of folksy. You're hitting us up with The Who and Smokey Robinson, Eric Clapton.
The first two songs. They're the top two songs that week.
And after that, it's been, you know, it's been popping.
How do I pick and choose?
That's true. Very good.
I had this feeling I should always play the top song that week, just so we know what everyone was grooving to.
That's right.
Back that.
Back in 1970.
Back in 1970. And then, you know, I always loved me some James Taylor.
Well, you may think I prep for this show and do this show while jogging on a treadmill or taking a walk around the neighborhood. I don't. I sit. And if you sit, you want to be comfortable because maybe you sit for a while at your job and you're not comfortable. Well, Purple Seat Cushion wants to change all that. You may have heard of the Purple Mattress. Well, now it's the Purple Seat Cushion. Soft where you want it and firm where you need it and cool all over. Instantly adapts to your body. It's personalized comfort and support. And it's support that lasts all day so you don't experience seating fatigue as you work your butt off. Sits the tests of time. It's ultra durable. It can follow you around for years. So you can take it from the office, back home, to the game, wherever you want to go. It's also got handles to make it totally toteable from place to place. It's different from the mattress because it's specifically formulated for sitting. The Purple Mattress is formulated for you lying down. This is formulated so when you sit, it's got a 30-day trial, 1-year warranty, free shipping and returns, purple.com/seat cushions. It's purple.com/seat cushions. cushions. This is fantastic. Total no pressure support, soft and firm at the same time, so you can sit at work, and it's got hundreds of open air channels to keep you comfortable at a nice temperature. Again, purple.com/seat cushions. So I had to bring this up on the show today because the Mets general manager, Brody Van Wagenen, has announced what Tim Tebow's going to do next season for them. He's going back.
Really?
Yes, he did.
Oh,
we thought his baseball career would be over. Like, he's getting married. The broadcasting career is going on well. He had to have stitches in his hand for catching a baseball. But he does, the GM for the Mets, expects Tebow to return to Syracuse next season.
Nice.
So we have another year of a chance to hope and pray that Tebow makes it to the majors.
No. This is the year.
This is the year. Don't get hurt. But he did bat 163 last season.
You want to know how I know this is a year? What is the 20th letter of the alphabet?
Are you catching? I don't know. T?
T.
Is it really?
Just
wow.
Saying. Wow.
I'm starting to do like ABC. Absolutely. All right.
I'm pretty sure it is.
2020. Tebow's expected to be at Syracuse where he batted 163 last year.
2020? TT?
That's right. By the way,
it's in the bag.
It's time, even though it's the offseason, it is time to criticize the Mets now.
Okay, I see where you're going with this.
Jacob DeGrom won the Cy Young again.
Yes, he did.
All right?
Back-to-back
years. And Jacob DeGrom struggled a little bit early and then dominated the rest of the way, earning Cy Young, the second straight Cy Young Award.
Near unanimous.
A few days before that, Pete Alonso, who hit 53 home runs, was awarded the Rookie of the Year.
Yep.
There is no excuse for this team to miss out on the playoffs.
And I think, was it Pete Alonso? That was near unanimous as well, right?
That was near unanimous as well. I think that was 29 of 30. So they've got two key players on their team that are winning postseason awards, and they don't make the postseason. It's time to make the postseason.
Well, here's the rub, Tony.
Yep.
Jacob DeGrom, how many wins did he have this year?
He was 11-8, I think.
Now, think back to last year. How many wins did he have last year?
Last year was kind of the same line, wasn't it? 10-11?
Yeah. So in 2 years' time, he has 21 wins.
Yeah,
that's usually the benchmark to get a Cy Young.
Yeah, exactly. Like, when they announced Jacob DeGrom was the winner, I was like, well, I don't – let me find out – you know, well, because remember last year it was.
Last year made a lot more sense.
We talked about it all year leading up to the Cy Young Award because we were like, this guy's record is not good, but his ERA is incredible. He's not allowed a run in this many innings. He's not allowed runs in this many innings or three.
Last year, I want to say his ERA was below two.
Right. Yeah, it was like 1.83 or something like that.
Ridiculous.
Right.
Only 10 wins.
And then only because the Mets were like, when he pitches, we don't have to bat, apparently. We don't have to provide any run support. Right? So this year, 11-8 with a 2.73 ERA, but much of the bulk of the work, of the impressive work, came after like midway through May or something. Then after that, he was dominant. Pete Alonso, 53 home runs for a rookie, and the Mets, you know.
Rookie record.
So you and I have this dilemma, which is we want to see Tebow play for the Mets, but the Mets kind of have to stink in order for Tebow to be called up.
Unless next year is his year, like I said, TT 2020.
He just all of a sudden magically can play baseball at the highest level possible.
It could happen.
Hey, don't mess with the Tebow.
A couple of, or 2 years ago, he was an injury wrist away from making it to the big show.
I still believe that. I think the Mets that year would have called him up if he didn't hurt in Binghamton when he was in Binghamton, I think.
Yeah.
Was it Binghamton? I don't remember where he goes.
He was in Binghamton.
I think it was a Binghamton. I believe it, the Mets would have said, come on up. We're out of the playoff race. Get your butt up here and play at Citi Field.
Yeah. Play right field. Get your at-bat. That's all we want.
Sell some uniforms for us.
All you and I want is for him to get a base hit.
Right. That's it. Put himself in the record book.
I don't want a Moonlight Graham situation happening with him.
Right.
You know, I don't want, you know, for Kevin Costner to have to visit him years later because Tebow is a saint at that point
right,
in time.
Exactly.
Because, I mean, like I keep saying, he's one miracle away from becoming a saint. So he will get sainthood eventually in his lifetime. I want him to get in a bat.
Well, I gave you the update from the Mets general manager on his playing status for next year. But maybe he'll like married life too much and be like, I'm done. I'm done with baseball.
Well, you know, I mean, he'll like one aspect of married life because he hasn't done that part
yet. Yeah, that's true. He hasn't done that part yet. Right. Exactly.
Either that's going to help him or soften him.
By the way, congratulations to Justin Verlander edging out Gerrit Cole. I don't have a vote. I would have voted for Gerrit Cole, but I would have voted for Gerrit Cole the same way people voted for Verlander. It wouldn't have mattered. Either one. Either one was totally worthy.
Yeah,
I would have voted for Cole, but totally cool that Verlander won it.
Basically, you have a double-edged sword here.
Totally.
You know, the Astros have been cheating all year long, apparently. So obviously their pitchers are going to be 1-2.
That's right.
No, you have.
Does this come with an asterisk now?
Yeah, probably. Verlander was really dominant first half of the season. Gerrit Cole obviously dominant second half of the season.
Right.
The fact is that both of these pitchers were dominant all season long. I really felt that this award should have been a tie. It should have been 1A, 1B.
I agree. It's or something along those lines.
Yeah.
But Verlander did get four more first place votes, so it was close, but it wasn't nip and tuck close. I mean,
yeah.
Four votes, but Charlie Morton of the Rays came in third. Nobody else. This is how dominant those two pitchers were. Another former Astro is right. Nobody got a second place vote or first place vote on the list of pitchers after Verlander and Cole. There are 30 votes.
See, that's what I'm saying. 1A, 1B.
1A, 1B. Exactly. Charlie Morton got 18 third place votes, which would have had him at the Heisman Trophy ceremony. But a distant third from these two guys who basically split the first and second place votes. Verlander didn't get a third, fourth, or fifth, and neither did Cole. And that's how dominant those two pitchers were. So, yeah, that's a good problem to have. Just to let you know, in case you're interested in any other pitchers that were up for this honor, Shane Bieber of the Indians was fourth. Lance Lynn of the Rangers was fifth. I totally forgot he had a good year, too. Eduardo Rodriguez was sixth. So there you go, the American League Cy Young Award voting. So good for Gerrit Cole and Justin Verlander.
And Teammates no longer.
Now the Yankees will probably be talking to Gerrit Cole about something, or Scott Boras about something. Is Boris going to do the same thing that he did with Bryce Harper?
Can Boris make $1 billion this offseason?
Yeah, I think so. He might.
Right? He's probably going to. Because,
Boris?
He controls Gerrit Cole. He controls...
Yeah, there's a couple of others he controls as free agents.
Strasburg, I think.
Yeah.
Because Strasburg opted out of his deal.
What a great problem to have. See, is he going to do that thing, though, where he's going to say, a pitcher like Gerrit Cole is worth $700 million? And baseball is going to go, nah, we won't accept anything less than 600. And then it settles down for like 300 or 285 or something like that. Because remember, Bryce Harper was going to be $500 million. Remember? He was talking about $500 million. I'm like, that's a little much.
Yeah.
400,000. 400 million. That's a little much.
Ended up at 330. That's not too bad.
Ended up at 330. So again, you know, set the market high, set the bidding war high, and see where you end up. You know, and he's kind of brilliant in that regard. But there you go. There's where your awards. I think, what's next? MVP now? We got Rookie of the Year done. Cy Young's done. MVP's done, right? Manager of the Year's are done.
All right,
so MVP's coming up.
Just real quick. I'm sorry. I had to look it up. Is Scott Boras, is he the only agent in baseball?
I don't know. I don't know any others that are prominent like him. Like, whenever there's a major free agent player in the game, I always expect it to be a Boris client.
Yeah. This was an article done September 24th this year, right?
Right.
And I guess he was asked, he was interviewed by John Heyman and Josh Levin on their podcast. And he was just asked about certain players, you know, whether or not, you know, some of his free agents who would be opting out or maybe not opting out. You know, Steven Strasburg opted out. J.D. Martinez did not opt out, which is probably good on J.D. Martinez because he had a terrible season. But those are two Boris clients. He also, Elvis Andrus, Jake Arrieta, Anthony Rendon, Juan Soto.
That's a busy man.
Chris Bryant.
Yeah, that's a busy man.
I mean, I'm just, like, this list is like, it's a who's who in baseball. I mean, he literally is everyone's free agent, or everyone's agent.
Yeah. Anybody who's major, that's a Boris client. That's crazy. All right, coming up next, the ruling on Chase Young for Ohio State is in, and the critics are already out. We'll talk about that next, SB Nation AM.
I'm sleeping and right in the middle of a good dream. Like all at once I wake up from something that keeps knocking at my brain.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
The Partridge Family. David Cassidy and the Partridge Family. Deep in the back of my mind, Ron Culver, I was waiting to see if there was a kind of song like this for 1970 on Throwback Thursday. And there is. How big of a hit was this? A TV show and a song on the radio.
Yeah, this was top. I think this was fourth this week.
Wow, amazing. Trust the friendly, knowledgeable parts professionals at O'Reilly Auto Parts. The professionals know what it takes to get the job done right. Professional technicians have counted on O'Reilly Auto Parts for years. Come see for yourself. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Adam Burns, Bet Online, is going to join us in a few minutes. We'll talk about the lines for this weekend's NFL games, including tonight, Steelers and Browns. But Chase Young.
Before we get to Chase Young, I just had a quick question. You know, because they do so many remakes now with TVs and movies. Right?
Right.
Could you see a remake of The Partridge Family?
No. I think David Cassidy made the show.
I mean, what if they brought in, you know, what if it was like Zac Efron?
Yeah, maybe Zac, yeah. Well, he's old now, isn't he?
Right, he's old, but I'm saying a guy like him.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I just thought that worked because, no, you're right. It would take a star, because I think it worked because people like David Cassidy. I think the TV show is basic. I don't think it was hilarious or anything like that.
No,
I think people tuned
tunes
in for David Cassidy and catchy tunes. Yeah. Might be right.
No one was tuning in for Danny Bonaducci.
That's right. That's right. All right. So Chase Young is going to be suspended one more game.
Oh, that's
one
harsh.
One more game.
So harsh.
So missing out on two. And if you've been following this story, taking a loan from a family friend and using it to help his girlfriend get to the Rose Bowl to watch him play.
Family friend needs to be in quotes when you do it.
That's right. Family friend needs to be in quotes. And he paid back the loan. May or may not have been an agent. But this is drawing people nuts because they're saying, look, this is one of the reasons the NCAA stinks, because here's a guy who needed money. He can't make any money on his own, needed to borrow money from a family friend, then repaid it in full. And the NCAA is coming down on him for two games, taking two games away from his college career.
That's terrible. But I'm also going to say it's terrible in the NCAA because they want to make sure that he's back in time for a marquee game.
Of course.
Because you don't want, maybe they were getting pressure from the Big Ten. Saying, guys, listen, yes, we, okay, go ahead and suspend him. We need him for this game.
This is the kind of rule, though, that makes you go, okay, look, I understand what the NCAA is trying to do here, but they're trying to be consistent. Here's the problem when you make all of these rules and you punish all of these people for a variety of these things, is that in some way you're beholden to those rules until you absolutely declare that that is not a punishable offense, right? So when I look on Twitter and I see all of these people saying, how dare they suspend this guy, he took money, he paid it back, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the NCAA would come back and say, yeah, but you know what? We punished all these other people that did the exact same thing in all the decades that we've had this rule in place. They're trying to avoid that situation where there is an added benefit. The problem is, I never understand that logic, because it seems to me, having gone to college, having seen athletics, having seen it as big as it can get, that there is an added benefit for playing college athletics, big time college athletics. Like, you're trying to create an environment where Chase Young is your average student athlete, and we know that's not true. We know that's not true, that he gets a lot of benefits for being a member of the Ohio State Buckeyes. And if it means quote-unquote family friend, it means quote-unquote family friend. But this shines the light on what they have been trying to do with the California law, and now something the NCAA is going to do on its own, right? Chase Young did not have the ability to make enough money to get his girlfriend to the Rose Bowl, to watch him play in the Rose Bowl. He was unable to use his fame and his notoriety to generate any income so that that could take place. So he went with another avenue. Whether this family friend was an agent or not, it's irrelevant. You're not supposed to do it. You're not really supposed to do it even if it's a family friend that's not an agent, right? I told you the story about the guy I used to do those radio shows with. He had a business, and he was friends with a lot of South Carolina football players. And there were days where we would talk, and I would be a little like, oh, are you in compliance with, like, I literally wanted to say, you're not putting the school at risk, are you? It sounds like you're really close to these players in terms of knowing their backgrounds and knowing their situations. And I know you have a lot of money. Are you sure you're not putting the school in any danger? Like, I really wanted to say this, and I just kept my tongue and held back. There's thousands and thousands of people like him that are out there in college athletics, right? That become your family friend once you're playing for their school. This isn't a family friend by all accounts. So people have looked into this. This isn't a family friend that knows the family from when Chase was a kid and grew up through the ranks. There's reports that this is a family friend that became a family friend once he decided to play at Ohio State, which is the caveat. But now we're going to see this in a couple of years kind of go by the wayside, because Chase Young could go to a car dealership, make 10 grand, fly his girlfriend first class to the Rose Bowl. No problems whatsoever. He could even do something where the person pays for the trip for his girlfriend. Says, I'll do an autograph signing at your restaurant between 6 and 8. And after that, if you wouldn't mind getting my girlfriend a ticket in a hotel and a plane ride out to the Rose Bowl or wherever we're going, I'd appreciate it. They can work those deals out now. So two games, yeah, it seems harsh. I get it. But again, I'm not sticking up for the NCAA by any means. But it is unfair to say they should have swept this under the rug when they didn't sweep it under the rug for a lot of other people who have been benefited by this. You can argue the ridiculousness of the rule, and I would hear you on every level, and I would agree with you on a lot of levels. But you can't all of a sudden say, because Chase Young did this, and it seems ridiculous today, unless you're actively putting in place a nullification of that angle to what you're trying to accomplish and announcing that pre-Chase Young, then you have to do something to him like you did to everybody else that had a family friend.
I just hope they don't make it confusing. I just hope it's just clear cut. It's like either you do or you don't. I don't want it to be, well, if you do it this way, it's allowed. If you do it this way, it's not allowed. You're allowed to have these certain privileges, but you can't have it. You can't have these certain privileges, where it just really gets, almost to the point like where we're trying to define what a catch is.
Right. True.
And just make it easy, make it simple, that everyone, we kind of know what's allowed and what's not allowed.
But you know what else is bizarre about this? And again, this is just looking at the words and kind of twisting the words. And I know I'll be doing this. If you're saying that Chase Young can't borrow money from a family friend, agent or otherwise, to go to the Rose Bowl because it gives him an unfair advantage or it gives him an extra benefit for playing sports, and you're trying to create this environment where a student athlete and a student are kind of on the same page. Students borrow money from family friends all the time, family and friends all the time for a variety of things.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, there's all sorts of situations. So if he really is a truly family friend, there would be no different than if he, like,
You and I would be in the same position. If it wasn't for our family, we probably wouldn't have much of a social life in college.
I borrowed when I was in college, I borrowed a lot of money from Bank of Mom and Dad, that I think is still, there's probably some collection notices on the side that piling up, just sitting in the corner.
Why do you think you go to see them every holiday?
Right. This is how I pay them back. Every time I visit, they take one of the notices and they throw it away.
They burn it in the fire. You fulfilled this debt, son. Thank you.
Exactly. So there is something along these angles where you're a poor college kid. You may work at a part-time job, but you're a poor college kid and you need money from time to time. If it's an agent, okay. But if it's a legit family friend, then it's not an advantage because he's an athlete.
I would say
all these kids do this.
Outside of the students that go to USC where parents pay other people to get their kids into that school, there are no rich college kids.
Right, exactly.
That's always the joke. It's like, my staple meal in college was mac and cheese and beans.
Completely.
Because it was cheap and easy to make.
Mac and cheese and hot dogs was my favorite go-to meal.
You know what? And every time I'll have it every once in a while, it's nostalgic for me.
That's right. That's right.
You were saying earlier, your son's, can live off of ramen noodles.
He loves ramen noodles. And
he
I said, congratulations.
Off of ramen noodles.
I told him that the other day. He's making ramen the other day. And I said, dinner's almost ready. He goes, man, I just love ramen. I go, good. Because that's what you'll be eating a lot of in college.
Yeah.
Ha ha ha.
And he's going to find new ways to prepare it.
That's right. You're going to add chicken to that. You're going to add all sorts of different items to that. Good
you
for
not
you.
Even add water.
That's right. That's right. But two games for Chase Young, and then he'll be back in time for the big Penn State game, because that's how it really works. Don't necessarily need you this week. I don't even know who Iowa State's playing this week. Who are they playing? I'm not sure. Oh, Rutgers. That's right. 50-point favorites against Rutgers. Nevertheless, he'll be back for Penn State, and that's really what the Big Ten wanted.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
We're going to 1970 with our Throwback Thursday today, a memorial of the Marshall plane crash in Huntington, West Virginia on this date in 1970. This weekend's NFL game starting tonight with the Steelers and the Browns. Our good friend Adam Burns joins us from Bet Online to go over the lines and some of the numbers for this weekend. How are you, Adam?
I'm doing good. You guys?
Good. Before we get to the NFL, I wouldn't mind asking you about this Ohio State Rutgers line that's getting a lot of fun attention from media around the country. It is at 50.5. Is that something bettors jump on, stay away from? That's a big number.
I would say this year, early in the year, there were some really big spreads like that. And the bettors were taking the favorites and they were covering.
Wow.
But we're seeing a little more on Ohio State, but those are the games, you're right. The volume of it is not as big as some of the other closer matchups.
Is it because, like, you know, when you think of a game like that where it's 50.5, let's say, or 51, where if the other team scores a fluky touchdown or maybe gets two fluky touchdowns or whatever, then all of a sudden that the other side has to score like 70, and a lot of teams just don't do that.
Yeah, correct. Those big spreads, if the other team gets an early touchdown, especially the underdog, then you can see that sort of thing happening. And it happens often, and people always say, you know, the backdoor cover and a useless touchdown for no reason. You lose by half a point.
Right.
But, definitely that's something that, you know, but when you bet those big spreads, that's your only chance, basically, if you're taking the underdog.
All right, let's get to tonight's game, Steelers and the Browns. And for the Browns, it's not a must-win, but it's close at 3-6 if they want to get back into this thing. Steelers have won 4 in a row. What are the numbers for tonight's game in Cleveland?
Yeah, well, I was surprised. I mean, Cleveland's -3. Go early in the week, maybe around on Monday, maybe Tuesday, we were taking probably 70% of the money on the Steelers, but it's really come down now, and a lot of people are starting to take the Browns. So it's going to be interesting to see who we need tonight overall. But I was thinking we were going to need the Browns pretty big. We'll still need them, but at the book, but not as big as we would have on Monday or Tuesday.
All right, let's get to some games on Sunday, and let's go to the Saints and the Buccaneers. The Saints coming off a loss to the Falcons, and the Bucs coming off a win against Arizona. Spread looks like to be about 5.5 for New Orleans. Any particular number that stands out in that game?
Yeah, I like the Bucs here, personally, at +5.5 at home. But the bettors don't disagree with me. Two-thirds of money is coming in on the Saints, especially after they lost it last week. I think people think they'll bounce back. But that's going to be a good game. It's an important game for, you know, for these teams and divisional games. So those are always pretty heavily bet and more interesting.
It looks like the point total on the over-under is 50. Is that high, about right? Where is that number fitting with you?
Yeah, it's the second highest total of the week. The other two being second highest. The other one being the highest is the Chiefs-Chargers on Monday. But, yeah, that seems about right. I mean, those are two teams that score a lot of points. So on that one, we're going to bet a little bit more on the under, but that's probably right about where it should be.
Jacksonville at Indianapolis, the Jags coming off the bye in the London trip, but they also have Nick Foles back at quarterback. Still don't know much about Nick Foles playing with Jacksonville since he was out in week one. Is caution here? Where's the spread, and where do you see this game?
Yeah, it's Colts -2.5, which seems about right. And like, as you mentioned, there's question marks around Nick Foles, how he's going to play. And we have his over-under passing yards this week at 240 yards. So, you know, about 1.5 touchdowns of favoring the under a little bit. So it's going to be interesting to see. This game's getting bet 50-50 pretty much right down the middle. I expect that to continue towards Sunday.
Broncos and Vikings. Denver, 11 points underdog against Minnesota?
Yeah, 10.5.
10.5?
We're taking more money on, we're taking more money on Minnesota here. Maybe about 65%. So we're going to need the Broncos this weekend.
The Broncos' defense isn't as ferocious as in years past, but again, that point total at 40.5. Do you like the over on that one with the Vikings?
Yeah, I actually like the over, yeah. 40.5 is one of the lowest totals of the week as well, except for the Jets-Redskins game. But I like the over on that one if I were to bet it.
The Atlanta Falcons taking on the Carolina Panthers, and Atlanta's passing game hurt. Austin Hooper is out. Did that affect the spread, and where do you see Falcons, Panthers, and Charlotte?
It didn't really affect the spread too much. We're taking quite a bit more money on Atlanta. You know, Carolina's sort of in shambles a little bit there. And Atlanta started off really poorly, but, you know, it's, again, divisional game. I'm surprised how much more is coming in on Atlanta, probably two-thirds of the money. So we're going to need Panthers at home. It's rare that we see those situations. I was expecting to get bet more evenly, but it is what it is.
You know, we talk about this on a kind of a observational look when a team like the Falcons who struggle and nothing seems to be going right, and they have these kind of wins like against the Saints last week. Yeah, it happens in the NFL every now and then. For you guys that look at numbers and look where the money is going, how does a game like that, where it could just simply be an anomaly, but it could be something else, how do you view that going into the following week's game?
Yeah, a lot of bettors have short-term minds. So if a team plays really well and pulls a big upset, you'll see more money on them the next week.
Got it. So we're seeing that with the Falcons.
Yeah. So that plays into it a little bit. But we're also looking at the matchup and how they match up against each other defensively, offensively. Once we open the line, we look at obviously how much volume of bets coming in, but also who's betting it. Is it our sharper bettors betting this side, or is it our just regular players betting it? And, you know, we'll tend, even though the money might be with the public side, if some sharp guys come in on the other side, and even though we don't need them, you know, we'll tend to move the line that way. But in the NFL, you don't see major line moves too much. You know, once they open Sunday night, going right into the next Sunday, barring injuries or really bad weather, which might start coming up into play a little bit, we don't really take too much account into the volume of money, but more the matchup and when setting the spread. And then it will move a little bit here and there, but I don't see a lot of movement this week.
Adam Burns joining us again on Bet Online as we go over some numbers from NFL in the upcoming weekend. Are the Dolphins playing better enough that the 6 points they're getting against Buffalo is intriguing?
Yeah, it's getting about 55% on the Dolphins. You know, home dogs with the Bills. The Bills start off really well, but now they're sort of tailing off. We're going to need the Bills. I actually like the Bills in this situation. But that's a close spread. I mean, it's a touchdown, basically, or two field goals. So I think that one, we're going to need the Bills at the book.
And that's a 40. That's a 40.5 point total on the over-under. That seems about right. Neither of these teams are good at scoring.
No, but we're taking quite a bit, maybe 80% of the money on the over.
Over, oh, nice.
I opened at 40.5. See, there's a little blind move. I mean, it was 40.5, now it's 41.
Yeah, but, you can almost see a late touchdown kind of extending this game, making it more, you know, 28-18, then, you know, or something along those lines.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, a big one in for the AFC, and that's the Texans and the Ravens, and Lamar Jackson having an MVP performance, and Deshaun Watson is in that conversation too. This looks like an even matchup to me. What do the numbers say?
Yeah, Ravens are 4.5-point favorites, taking almost straight down the middle, 50-50 on both teams. It's a good matchup too, kind of same type of quarterback. You know, and as you said, Lamar Jackson, he's one of the favorites to win the MVP right now. That's going to be an interesting game. And it's, you know, we have two exciting quarterbacks like that that are going to run around and put up some points. You know, the total in that one is 50 as well. So I think that's going to be a good game on Sunday.
Where do you guys stand with the MVP for the NFL right now after, 10 weeks?
Yeah, well, Russell Wilson's the favorite. Then you got Lamar Jackson in there. After that, it kind of tails off a little bit. You know, we have a couple running backs, Cook and McCaffrey. It's rare that the running backs win. I think the last one was Peterson a few years ago. But those are kind of the two that are standing out. I mean, Mahomes is still in the conversation, depending on, he could have one or two big games. After that, there's no one else really that's in the mix of it, you know, that much. But I think right now the two clear favorites are Wilson and Jackson.
The Arizona Cardinals and the San Francisco 49ers, and this game, when they played on the Thursday night, was closer than people thought. It's an 11-point spread, at least what I see. Does any of the Thursday night game play into how you process this game?
Not really. I mean, right now, the 49ers are pretty big favorites, 10.5, and rightfully so. I mean, they did have that loss there last week. But we're actually getting bet on the Cardinals, getting all those points. Again, short-term memory, maybe people.
Sure.
49ers aren't as good as people think they are. So that one, we're going to need 49ers at home. It's getting bet pretty heavily, actually, right now. So I think that'll be one of our bigger decisions.
The numbers for the Eagles and Patriots, that is going to be, again, an interesting game, given that the Eagles are still one of those teams. We're not quite sure how good they are. We do know how good the Patriots are, and they're coming off a bye week. Where do you see that game?
Well, this is definitely the game of the week, and it's right now, I mean, at the pace it's getting bad, this might decide our day, how we do overall. And the Patriots, even though they're on the road, they're taking obviously more money than the Eagles. We're going to need Eagles probably really big on Sunday. And if I'm going to bet, which I probably will that game, I'm going to take the Eagles.
3.5, what did you say, 3.5 on that one?
Yeah, 3.5.
Yeah, Patriots, good. Bears and Rams, Bears still struggling figuring out who they are, and the Rams are so as well. Where do you see that one in L.A.?
You know, Bears' defense is pretty good. Rams' offense has been pretty bad. So it's going to be – this is a tough one to handicap. We have the Rams at 6.5. But, you know, I think the Bears there might be the play. And the bettors are seeming to agree with me on that one.
And Adam Burns, great stuff as always. We love talking to you on Thursdays as we get ready for the Thursday night game and the weekend. Appreciate your time, my friend.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, love talking to Adam Burns. Good numbers. I didn't see any number on the Cowboys and Lions coming up. And, of course, there's the Monday night football game. But a lot of interesting betting numbers, including there's that game that just stands out for me in terms of the point total in the game was the Saints and Buccaneers at 50. That's a lot. But, again, these two teams can really score. We know the Saints can put up some points. But Jameis Winston throws the ball around a lot. And Buccaneers can put some numbers on the board. They just don't win a lot, but they can put some numbers on the board, too. So, again, Bet Online. Head on over there. Use promo code SBNation55. Get 50% off your first deposit at Bet Online. We'll come back. We'll get some more thoughts on Thursday night's game between Cleveland and the Steelers next, SB Nation AM.
This is Mike Persian. Let's Talk Wheels. We're brought to you by our great friends at Jeep. Got a tip today for our boaters and off-roaders. We always talk about what to do when storing our toys for an extended period. The biggest thing to worry about is the fuel going bad and the battery going dead. Now, once the battery drops below half charge, it starts causing damage. First, you need to remove the battery and put it on a trickle charge. Now, this saves you from having to buy a $120 battery every year. Of course, you can get a trickle charger for $20, so go get one and use it. Next, top off the fuel tank and pour in fuel additive to prevent damage from the ethanol in the fuel. If either engines are liquid cooled, check that the coolant is clean and in good shape. If your storing machine's outside, it wouldn't hurt if you get a can of engine fogging oil, pull the plugs, and spray it into the engine. If you're storing it indoors, you don't have to worry about anything. Taking these steps now makes the job a breeze in the spring. This is Mike Hirsch from Let's Talk Wheels, your boss, by our great friends at Jeep. For more tips, go to sportsmap.com.
You don't have to wait for Black Friday to get a great deal. Hurry into the Jeep Black Friday sales event today, where it's easier than ever to get a new Jeep SUV, because we've got employee pricing plus all month long. So whether you plan on spending the winter adventuring through the wilderness in a Jeep Cherokee with its 4x4 capability, exploring your city in a luxurious Jeep Grand Cherokee, or seeking the perfect postcard-ready view through Jeep Compass's available panoramic dual-pane sunroof, no matter what your winter holds, you can always make it better in a Jeep SUV. So no more waiting in line and no more camping out, because Employee Pricing Plus is here all November long. Hurry in to the Jeep Black Friday sales event today. Offers available on the purchase or lease of new 2019 model year vehicle excluding Jeep Wrangler. Must take retail delivery by 12/2/2019. See dealer for details. Jeep is a registered trademark.
Don't you know I'll have me a time with a poor man's lady itching on a twilight train.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Neil Diamond, 1970. This hour of SB Nation Radio, presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. I felt like a DJ there, like hitting the post. Right there with the Neil Diamond, Cracklin' Road.
Yep.
Yeah, he had a lot of hits. I told you, this is one of my favorite songs of his, but I would have, because I'm not from that era, I would have guessed 75, 76. This was 70. I know Holly Holy was a big hit for him in the like 68 or 69.
That was his, I mean, he had about three or four in the top 100.
Oh, okay.
Another one is He Ain't Heavy, He's My Brother.
Yeah, that's right. There's another one.
Which I think it was made more popular by Austin Powers.
Sure. So there you go, Neil Diamond, 1970.
Do It?
Do It? Oh, I don't know that one.
I don't either. I'll have to listen to that one later.
I don't know his whole catalog.
You know, that's an underrated, that's a sneaky good album, like when you get a best of Neil Diamond.
Yeah.
You're shocked because you don't really know the song title.
Right.
You know, it isn't like when I say Beat It to you, you know exactly who the singer is.
Right.
But Neil Diamond, he has all these songs, you don't really know the titles, but then you start listening to it, it's like, oh my God, I didn't know that was him.
And if I'm not mistaken, I also think he wrote a lot of songs for other people.
Yeah.
So not only is he a performer, but he's also a songwriter that wrote for other people, which is also where the money is. So must be nice. 1970, the plane crash of the Marshall Thundering Herd on this date, again in 1970, on a throwback Thursday. So tonight, Steelers and Browns. You know, obviously, yeah, I'm rooting for the Steelers. I know you are. But even if I wasn't, I would be curious about the Browns. To me, is an intriguing story. If I wasn't a Steeler fan, I'd be really interested in either the resurrection or the ultimate demise of this organization that had so much promise to begin the season. I would be like, this could be it. 3-7, they're not going to go to the playoffs. They win, they only got a schedule that could lead them that way.
We still have hope.
Funny little trivia. The Browns, since rejoining the league in 1999, have had one playoff appearance in 20 years. That one playoff appearance was a game at Heinz Field against the Steelers, in which the Steelers won. The only time they made the playoffs was losing to Pittsburgh. So not only did they make the playoffs, they lost to their rival. So they face off tonight, Thursday Night Football.